Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
One morning a few months ago, I had this interesting conversation with my friend Justin. And so we were getting together, and he asked me what I had been up to that morning. And so I told him that, you know, as a matter of fact, I had woken up kind of early, and I was reading this book about the desert mystics, which is just basically these, you know, first, second, third century people who kind of decided to shun the civilized society and move out to the desert by themselves to basically devote themselves to nothing but, you know, eating, praying, and loving. 2,000 years before the bestseller. And I said, so in reading that, I was kind of inspired to read a little bit in the Bible afterwards, to which Justin looked at me behind furrowed brow and said, why would you do that? And partly just to push his buttons, I said, so that I could grow spiritually. To which he responded, sounds dumb. Now, this whole dialogue had a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek vibe to it. It's all kind of part of this verbal sparring that we do where I push his buttons and he pushes my buttons, and it's all great fun, but it actually raises a much more serious question that I think we want to grapple with over the next few weeks, which is, do we even know what we're talking about when we say spiritual growth? I mean, I think for many of us, it's a concept that's like, at best, it's murky. And at the very worst, it's downright dumb. And I think that's a little bit problematic because all of us, at some level, regardless of where you are on your faith journey, at some level, you came here today hoping to grow a little bit, right? To grow as friends, to grow as neighbors, to grow as fathers and daughters and sons and siblings and community members and wholehearted human beings. But at some level, you're hoping to grow. But if we don't know what spiritual growth is, our job becomes pretty tricky. So first thing I wanted to do this morning was take the opportunity to clarify what spiritual growth is. So your spiritual growth is directly proportional to the number of Bible verses you can recite from memory and the number of Sunday mornings you've spent wanting to claw your eyes out at a boring church service. So if you have 100% attendance at church, you're 100% spiritually mature, right? Okay, so if that's not what it is, though, then we kind of have this void. What really is it, right? And that's where things get tricky, right? If that is the definition, I think most of us would agree with Justin and say, sounds dumb. And thanks, but no thanks. I'm not really interested in that. So what is it then? Well, for a dyed-in-the-wool empiricist like Justin, spiritual growth, spiritual maturity, those terms alone, they conjure up images of, you know, these people in flowing robes holding forth on the secrets of the universe and spending their days in idle conversation, debating the meaning of this or that ancient scripture, all the while never really lifting a finger to engage with the world right outside their door, that big bustling place where there's real people with real problems and real struggles and real friends with real heartaches, all happening on a planet that's dying. And they're just sitting there debating these kind of pointless questions, right? The whole concept is just a bit too metaphysical for his liking. Now, on the other hand, you have someone like me where I do tend to ask those questions. I do tend to think a lot that way, right? If I'm honest, that is my first instinct. I am more concerned with the, call it the metaphysical questions, right? More than what's going on right now, circa 2015, according to the headlines of the New York Times today, right? I'm concerned about the human condition and the big picture, right? Thousands of years ago before today that led us to this point, and thousands of years ago after today, what are we all doing here? What really is the point of human existence, right? I do like to ponder the fate of the world. So the question, though, is which one of us is right? Are the Justins right, or are the Nicks right? Obviously, I'm right, but no. The answer, of course, is yes. Right? It's both of those. Either one of our definitions is necessarily incomplete without the other one. So if we have kind of the more, let's call it the doing school of spiritual growth over here, at the far end of the spectrum, we have the thinking school of spiritual growth, and neither of us are right without the other one. Somewhere in between, somewhere at the intersection between thinking and doing is where spiritual growth really happens. And this is helpful for me to, you know, when I have people like Justin to kind of bring me back in, because my natural inclination is to, you know, have these philosophical inquiries, sometimes I can get caught in this web of thought, this trap wherein I think, you know, if I just think the right way, have the right beliefs, or arrive at the right conclusions, that's the secret to enlightenment, right? That's what being spiritually mature is all about. And the truth is, it's about both of those things. And so the first fill-in on your outline there is, growth is about action as much as it is reflection. Now, after that initial conversation, and in preparing for this message this morning, I had some conversations with other people, with more conversations with Justin, more conversations with other people in the Jacob's Well community, outside of it, people who believe in God, people who don't believe in God. And I wanted to kind of see if we could corner in, right, get our arms around this abstract notion of spiritual growth. And so I came up with what I think are maybe two more, let's call them parameters, or at least boundary conditions for what spiritual growth might be. All right, and so if the first one is that growth is about action as much as it is reflection, the second one is that growth is about love as much as it is ethics. So what do I mean by that? Well, if I, let's say I decided to give all my money to the poor, but I did it just so I could prove a point to those greedy corporate scumbags who are ruining the world. Yes, it's an act of charity, but that doesn't really count in terms of my spiritual growth, does it? Right? If what's driving my charity and my generosity is this venomous feelings of rage and anger and vengeance, that's not really part of my spiritual growth. But on the other hand, if I do the exact same thing, I decide that I do want to give all my money to the poor, but I do it simply because I love my brothers and sisters, and I care that they're going through hard times. I'm driven by compassion for them, for their plight, to help them, and that's it. Not to make a statement, not to prove a point, but simply because I feel for them, right? Now, all of a sudden, the exact same act becomes a very different act, spiritually speaking, right? That does contribute to our spiritual growth. And so it's like, you know, if I just begrudgingly adhere to some rigid code of ethics or mindlessly follow some list of commandments, I'm kind of missing the point. Now, if I am spiritually mature, I probably should be ethical. I should be moral. I should be doing the right thing. But it's more than that. It's bigger than that, right? It's what's driving that. And I do think, you know, in that second case, if I'm giving money and I'm doing acts of charity out of love, I think that actually has a bigger impact on the world, even on those people that are receiving it, right? Because I'm treating them not like pawns in somebody else's game of political ideologies, but like real people who deserve love and deserve compassion, just like I would want, right? Now all of a sudden everybody wins, right? They're winning on a spiritual level as well as a monetary level. So it's about love as much as ethics. Now the third thing that I think would help here, and I think this is really kind of the culmination of the other two, is that growth is as much about meaning as it is about happiness. So don't get me wrong here. It's not that happiness can't result from growth, or that happiness and meaning are somehow mutually exclusive, right? Happiness often does result from meaning, but It's just that meaning is a lot bigger concept than that, right? The story of growth is much deeper and much more important than mere happiness. You know, some of you probably came in here this morning feeling pretty good, right? You're thinking, today's a great day. It's Sunday. I got time to spend with my family. I got time to do the things I want to do, go see some friends. It's a good day. And others of you, it was probably all you could do just to drag yourself out of bed this morning. And to put on that phony smile so that when you walk through these front doors here, nobody else would have to be burdened with your quiet desperation. Right? Because for whatever reason, your kids are driving you nuts. Your parents are driving you nuts. Right? You're having a lot of stress at work right now. Or maybe a loved one is ill. Right? It's someone you know, someone that you care deeply about, is now pretty sick. And so it's really a struggle just to come in here today. And the cool thing about meaning is that even if that's you, even if you walked in here today feeling those struggles and feeling that heartache, even though you might be miles away from the clinical definition of happy, you actually have a head start on the path to growth. And so not surprisingly, this is one of the things that pretty much all the world's major religions agree on, but it's not just religious mumbo-jumbo either. Psychological studies have actually shown that when bad things happen to us, hard things in our life happen to us, it does actually decrease a person's momentary happiness. But oddly enough, it actually increases that same person's sense of purpose and overall satisfaction with their lives. Now, how could that be? Well, imagine that you have a loved one in the hospital right now, right? That someone you love is very ill, maybe even terminally ill, and they're in the hospital right now. Well, in a time of happiness, you'd get sucked in by the minutiae of mindless busyness of everyday life, but not in this situation. In this situation, all of a sudden, this struggle, this tragic event, this bad thing has forced you to reshuffle your priorities. And all of a sudden, you're thinking more clear than you have in years. And you're thinking, you know what? I got to let go of my need to have a spotless house all the time. Or I got to let go of my desire to drive a nicer car or to shave a few strokes off my golf game this summer. And in some ways, in spite of the fact that you feel like the world is crashing down on you, you still are able to have these moments, even if they're however fleeting, just a few moments where you have this deep breath and you're just instantly filled with gratitude for all the things that you actually do have, the things that really do matter, the foundation of your existence, the things that make your life really worth living, instead of getting caught up by the trap of all the other things. Right? So it's about meaning as much as it is happiness. Now, I think when we bundle all these factors together, action plus reflection, love plus ethics, meaning plus happiness, it starts to point to something bigger, right? For me, it points to something that's a little bit more visceral. It's more important and it's deeper, and it's like it's intuitive, but it's not really tangible. And yet, at the same time, I have this sense that it's there and that it's real and that it's true, even though I can't quite put my finger on it, right? I can't quite articulate what it is that's tying all these things together, but it's there. And so for the sake of argument today, this morning, how about we just call that intangible something God, right? And when we do that, when we give a name to all these different concepts, right, these abstract notions, and we call it God, we have another definition for spiritual growth, right? And we could say that spiritual growth is the process of aligning what we see, hear, think, feel, and do in this world with God. Now, if you're like me, you hear that, you read that, and you're still thinking, okay, but what does that mean, right? I mean, aligning with God. Like, what is God? Does God exist? And what does God want? And if God does exist and God does want something, why do I care? Right, what does this matter to me? And those are tricky questions. And the main reason that they're tricky is because the moment that we try to give a concrete definition of growth or aligning with God or of God itself, it forces us to stuff God into a man-made box, right? So that our little pea shooter of a brain can comprehend this big notion, right? And so then all of a sudden, then the process of growth becomes nothing more than like a formula for trying to climb into that box with God, right? And so we do ourselves a disservice when we try and nail down exactly this is what God is and this is what God isn't. Exactly who or what God is a question that I'm not going to pretend to have the answer to today. And I'm not sure, frankly, that any of us were ever meant to have that answer. I think it's okay that we don't have an answer for that, because there is something about God that is inherently mysterious, right? And that thing, I think it should remain inherently mysterious so that we don't impose human limitations on a God that's bigger than any of us, right? On a notion that's bigger than any of us, that's more powerful than any of us. So let's just leave it with a little element of mystery and just accept that it's there and it's ambiguous and it's uncertain, and that's okay, right? But when we can start to kind of corner it and identify, well, it's sort of about this and it's sort of about that, right? We look at these boundary conditions, these parameters. We start to be able to see that, you know what, we can see in ourselves indicators of growth, and we can maybe start to identify how far we are along our path of growth, however we define that. Now, that becomes tricky, though. Even though these opportunities for growth are all around us every single day, whether we're in good times or bad times, it becomes a little challenging, not because we're evil or we're doomed or anything like that, but simply because we're real people and we live lives that are either too busy or not busy enough, and we're filled with all kinds of everyday distractions, right? And so I think we need a little bit of a plan on how are we going to approach this? How are we going to get out the everyday routine of our lives so that we can focus on the growth right there in the routine of our lives? As luck would have it, this guy, Jesus of Nazareth, had some thoughts on this too. And so, true to his cryptic form, Jesus decided to share these thoughts in a neat little story about a farmer. And so if we could pull that up here. The story goes like this. A farmer went out to scatter his seed in a field, you know, to sow his oats. And while the farmer was doing this, some of the seeds fell along the walking path, and they were stepped on or eaten by birds. And other seeds, well, they fell on the rocky ground, but the plants didn't have enough water, and they soon dried up. Other seeds, they fell where the thorn bushes grew up, and those thorn bushes choked the plants. But still other seeds, well, they actually fell on good soil, where they grew up tall and they grew up right with them Indiana boys on them Indiana nights. You might be more familiar with the Gospel of Luke version that says, the rest of the seeds fell on good ground, where they grew and produced 100 times as many seeds. Now, over the course of the next 4 weeks, we're going to spend this series, Dirt, What It Takes to Grow, unpacking these different kinds of dirt. And the main point that I want you to take away from this is that I'm good soil and you're bad soil. Right? Now, the truth is that we're all some combination of all four of these kinds, right? At different points in our life, at different times during the day, we're a little bit of the rocky ground, a little bit of the thorn bushes, a little bit of the seed that fell on the path, right? And sometimes, a lot of times, we're still the good soil. And so today what we're going to focus on is particularly the seeds that fell on the path. So Jesus goes on to explain in this parable what it means. So he says, this is what the story means. The seed is God's message. And the seeds that fell along the walking path are people who hear the message. But the devil comes and snatches the message out of their hearts so they will not believe and be saved. Yikes, sounds pretty sinister, doesn't it? Like the barb-tailed marauders just waiting in the bushes to snatch those seeds from us, right? Well, I think it's in a not-so-devious way, and actually in a little more banal way, what Jesus was talking about is quite simply our habits. Right? Now, I'm no gardener, but I know that things tend to grow better in loose soil than they do in packed soil. And the analogy here for us is that our habits, our automatic mental processes that we rely on day in and day out, have this way of sort of packing our soil, right? So that new things can never have a chance to take root and grow inside of us because we're too busy kind of mindlessly going through our day, unintentionally. And so we want to focus today on habits and how do they impact us and what can we do to use them and use them to nurture our growth rather than inhibit our growth. Because the truth is that sometimes our habits do inhibit our growth. So for example, we come to church on Sunday or we watch a TED Talk or we listen to a podcast or read an interesting article, have a great conversation with a really intriguing friend, and we identify in the midst of this that there are something that happened here that contains the seeds of real growth and real transformation. But before we ever have a chance to water those seeds, to nurture that insight, our habits take over, right? And so all of a sudden, this idea that really could transform us never has a chance to take root. And 3 days later, we forgot that we even had an insight. And no growth ever actually occurred because our mental habitual soil is just too packed. Now, quite often when we think of habits, our mind immediately goes to bad habits. And we start thinking about, smoking or eating junk food or biting our fingernails, right? Some of these habits can actually be pretty serious, right? They can evolve into addictions and compulsions and things that are doing real damage to ourselves and to others. And so, you know, I don't want to belittle those kinds of habits. If they are happening in your life right now, I don't think you have to deal with these alone, right? I mean, they are a cause for real concern. So talk to a pastor. Find somebody on your bus. Go seek professional help. But just make sure you're doing something to take care of it. But that being said, today I want to focus less on those big, bad habits and more on kind of the everyday habits, the routine ones that, frankly, it's not even clear whether they're good habits or bad habits. And that's, you know, psychologically speaking, that's what I think is the tricky thing about habits is because, without these automatic mental processes, we wouldn't be able to make it through a single day of life. Like, if we had to consciously and intentionally analyze every single sensation, every sight, sound, thought, feeling that came into our brain in every situation, every minute of the day, we would go insane, both figuratively and clinically, right? These automatic mental processes are designed to help human beings get through a day somewhat on autopilot, or we wouldn't be able to ever leave our house. So some of these habits are good, but others of them, they do actually get in our way. And so how are we supposed to know which ones are the parts that are actually helping us get through our day and maybe even grow a little bit, and then which ones are the parts that are getting in the way, that are packing our soil too tightly and preventing change and transformation from happening? My answer is I don't know. I don't know which of these habits are necessarily good and which are bad, but I had a thought. I had an idea this morning. I was thinking, since we're going to have, you know, a couple hundred people here today, why don't we turn this over to the wisdom of the crowd? Right, and so I thought we could play a little game that we'll just call good habit, bad habit. And so what I'd like you to do is I'd like everybody to stand up, right? Because I know some of you may not have been to a church in quite a while or maybe not been to a traditional church in quite a while. And I thought there's probably a part of you where you're missing the timeless ritual of sitting, standing, sitting, standing, sitting, standing, sitting, standing. So I thought, why don't we do a little bit of that today? So here's what we're going to do. So you're all standing now. I'm going to throw out some habits. And if you think it's a good habit, then I want you to stay standing. If you think it's a bad habit, then I want you to sit down. Okay, everybody clear on that? Okay. Watching TV. Good habit? Bad habit? Okay? Meeting friends for coffee or drinks. Good habit or bad habit? Playing video games. Good habit? Bad habit? We'll get to that. Working hard. Good habit or bad habit? All right. Reading the Bible. Good habit or bad habit? Thank you, Eric. All right, now this last one, I'm going to change it up a little bit. So this time, if you think it's a good habit, I want you to kneel instead of stand. Cheering for Minnesota Golden Gopher sport teams. If it's a good habit, kneel. Okay, good. I wanted to make you guys comfortable because I thought if you have a habit of cheering for the Gophers, you're probably used to being on your knees begging for mercy. So I thought maybe you'd be a little more comfortable there. Okay, you can go ahead and sit down now. Now, personally, like someone up there said, you know, I could think of a time when any of these are a good habit and they're a bad habit, right? And that's the challenge. And so I think it's kind of counterproductive to look at it that way, to look at it as, well, this is a good habit and that's a bad habit. So in fact, I think probably a better way to look at it is it's more productive to think of habits as examined or unexamined rather than good or bad. So what I mean by this, let's say watching TV, for example. So I, at times in my life, have had a habit of watching TV. Now, I could argue that that's good because, you know, I'm watching like, you know, if I'm watching like a smart indie flick, then, you know, I'm like culturally broadening my horizons. Or if I'm watching a documentary, I'm educating myself. But there's times, definitely times, a lot of times, when that same habit, even if I'm watching something good, has made me basically ignore my family, right? Ignore my kids, ignore my wife. It makes me stay up too late. Right? I get so focused in on what's happening on the TV, on what I'm watching, even if it's good and educational, that the whole world could crumble down around me and I have no idea, right? So in those moments, well, that's a bad habit. And if I repeat that over and over again every night, I have a bad habit that I need to address. Now, on the other hand, the flip side of that is my wife would be the first to admit that her aversion to television watching has sometimes morphed into a bad habit because it's inhibited her growth in her relationships with her kids. What I mean by that is a few years ago, my sons just didn't think it was fair that mommy and daddy got to have a date night every night, right? It's a date night, I mean we watch a movie when the kids go to bed, right? Nothing too big, right? But they didn't think it was fair that mommy and daddy got to have date night. I couldn't come up with a good reason why they couldn't have date night, so we instituted daddy date nights too. And so what this meant is we would, you know, eat pizza or something like that and then watch a kid-friendly movie like Lord of the Rings or Iron Man or something like that. And it would just be me and the boys. Because my wife, Allison, has a habit of productivity. And so instead of sitting on the couch being lazy watching TV, she'd much rather indulge her habit of cleaning the house, doing the laundry, returning emails, returning phone calls, anything but being a couch potato, which normally, that's a good habit, right? She's a productive, contributing member of society. But invariably, what would happen is a couple days later, the boys and I would share an inside joke about the movie that we watched, and she would feel hurt, disappointed, like she was being excluded from this relationship. And it's not because we were trying to exclude her. In fact, the boys would beg her every night to watch the movie with mommy, just sit down and watch the movie with us, right? But she didn't want to. Well, eventually she recognized that her habit of productivity was getting in the way of growing in perhaps three or four of the most important relationships she's ever going to have in her lifetime. And so now we have mommy date nights when I'm out of town, and we have family date nights when I'm in town. You'll be happy to know that now our date nights consist of nothing but G-rated movies. But it's okay, because that's not what it's about. There's another habit that I think is worth calling out here. Even the habit of mindful self-reflection and Bible reading can be a bad habit. So this is pointed out to me by a friend of mine who wants to remain nameless because she doesn't want to sound overly pious and self-righteous. So we'll just call her Melissa Locker. Now, Melissa Locker says that she had a habit of it, kind of like me. She's interested in the philosophical inquiry and the metaphysical questions of life. And so she likes to, read books like that, read the Bible, because it sparks those kinds of questions. And she said she could easily lose 2 hours every morning sitting in her chair thinking about these kinds of questions while reading the Bible. Meanwhile, her husband is left to do everything else. Take care of the kids, take care of the cat, clean the house, everything else that needs to be done while she's basking in the glow of God's word, right? So even this relatively good habit, arguably very good habit, has a point of diminishing returns where it actually becomes detrimental, not helpful. And so what she realized, to her credit, that Melissa Locker is very smart, that 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes of this in the morning can be exactly the habit that she needs to kind of find the spiritual resources necessary to cope lovingly and peacefully with all the demands on her time and her patience and everything else that's going to happen that day. But beyond that, 30 or 40 minutes later, not so good anymore. Same habit all of a sudden has become bad. And I think most of our habits kind of work that way. So when you think about them as examined or unexamined, what it means is we're not classifying rigid categories of good versus bad, but thinking about, how is this productive for me right now? How is it working to help me become the person I want to be, to help create a life that really matters now and in the future? And one really great way to do this is a system called the Daily Examine. It comes from the founder of the Jesuit Order of Catholic Priests, St. Ignatius Loyola. And he created this simple technique, and it's still widely used today, not just by priests or even by Catholics or even Christians, but atheists and agnostics as well. And what the examine is all about is just at the end of every day, you simply spend about 5 minutes kind of replaying your day, examining your habits. Right? And the big insight that led to the Daily Examine for St. Ignatius was that spiritual growth really can't be reduced to a list of do's and don'ts. Right? Rules are just simply too contextually dependent. A good rule today could be a bad rule tomorrow. And so we can't get ourselves trapped in and boxed in to these tight rules. But a better way to do it, right, a way that we could still help support and actually take an active role in our growth is through this loosely structured process of daily examination. And so the Daily Examine has 4 parts to it, right? The first part is you start by expressing gratitude. And the point of this is just simply to kind of get your mind in the right place. You just close your eyes and you just say thank you. Right? Thank God, thank the universe, thank whoever you want, just thank you that I have another day of blood coursing through my veins and oxygen in my lungs. And that's it. Even if it was a horrible day, just thank you for giving me another day. And the next step is you simply replay the day. You go through what happened today, just the events. You're not making value judgments, what was good or bad, but I woke up this morning, I had breakfast, I went to work, I had a meeting, I talked to this coworker, this guy cut me off in traffic, I went to lunch, right? Just what happened today? And then the third step is where you ask for forgiveness. Now, the point of this step is to riddle you with shame and guilt. No, right? That's exactly the opposite of this point, right? But St. Ignatius did call out that this is a likely possibility, that in the process of asking for forgiveness, you could fall into a guilt trap. And he kind of goes to great lengths to say that that's actually just as counterproductive as as not examining your day at all, right? If you cause this examination to induce guilt and that keeps you in a rut, well, that's not going to help you grow any at all either. And so the way to the way to figure this out, or the way to kind of counteract that, is he says that you really want to, when you're asking for forgiveness, the emphasis should be on the goodness of the universe, not the badness of you. So kind of what he's saying there, what he means is, think about the fact that we get to live in a world where no matter how badly we screwed up, no matter how badly we made a mistake, a big mistake, a little mistake, today, yesterday, the next day, no matter how badly we screw up, we live in a world where redemption is always possible. And it's as simple as asking for it. Saying, you know what, when that guy cut me off in traffic today, I probably didn't have to give him the bird, right? Forgive me for that. Or that work project, you know, maybe I could have given some more credit to the other people that helped me out instead of keeping it all for myself. Forgive me for that. And it's really that simple. And the beauty of it is, it sort of frees you to start over the next day with a clean slate. All right, and so the fourth step is to tweak it. Now, I'm pretty sure that St. Ignatius didn't use the word tweak it, but that's really all he was talking about, is like, don't keep beating yourself up over it. If you made mistakes, you had things that you want to correct, just simply, this isn't a thought experiment, think about, what are you going to do differently tomorrow? Tomorrow, I'm not going to give that guy the bird, right? Tomorrow, I'm going to say a nice thing to that coworker that I was kind of rude to today. You know, tomorrow, instead of ignoring that person that I saw on the street and pretending like they didn't exist, I'm going to go buy him a warm meal. Take me 5 minutes. That's it. It's that simple. And the beauty of it is, even if you don't do it correctly the next day, you get to start all over again. Ask for forgiveness again the next night and say, tomorrow I'm going to tweak it again. And so it just becomes this tiny little process of little tweaks that set you on the path to this pretty powerful spiritual growth. Recently, through this process of examination, I uncovered one of these little habits of my own. So like a lot of you, I use my smartphone as my alarm clock, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But what that means is, in order to use it as my alarm clock, I have to have my smartphone sitting at my bedside, don't I? Well, the problem is, every night when I have intentions to go to bed, I go down, I lay in bed, and then I think, you know what? I better check the weather quick, because I need to know whether tomorrow is going to be a long underwear day, which for me is 8 months a year, or if it's a t-shirt day or a sweater day, right? And so I'll just check the weather quick. So I do that, and then all of a sudden I unlock my screen, and this whole world of information opens up to me. And so now I'm checking the weather, and ooh, what do I see? A little blue F up in the corner. Someone just had a hamburger, and I didn't notice it. So I got to go check, and I mean, I can't go to sleep not knowing what that's about. And so then I go onto Facebook, and then I see, oh, wait a second, there's an article, and it's promising to tell me that how high Odell Beckham Jr. should go in my fantasy football draft this year. So clearly, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight without knowing that, so I read the article. And then I'm thinking, well, fantasy football, you know, that reminds me of my friends who are in my league, and I haven't really talked to them in a while, so I'll just send a quick text message to them, right? You know how it goes. And then all of a sudden, it's like an hour later after I intended to go to bed, and I'm just dorking around on my phone, doing nothing important, nothing that couldn't wait. So not only is it making me more tired than it needs to be, what really made me decide through the process of examination that I need to change this is because at the end of the night, so we have four kids, all day long, every time we try to have an adult conversation, my wife and I, it gets interrupted by some urgent need or another of our kids or of our jobs or of something going on. And so at the very end of the night, when we're laying in bed and everybody else is asleep, that's like the only time that we have to have some kind of an adult conversation. Even if it's pretty much small talk, it's not about anything big or important, but it's just a chance to connect as adults for the first time all day. Well, when I'm busy reading fantasy football articles and checking Facebook and checking the weather, this conversation isn't happening. That connection isn't happening, right? And so slowly, a tiny little bit of distance starts to develop, and it's almost imperceptible. Happens one night, not a big deal. Happens two nights, probably not the end of the world either. Three nights, four nights, But over a pattern of weeks, slowly, the distance grows wider and wider and wider to the point where you reach when 3 months later, you're like, I don't know what's going on, but there's something missing here, right? Something isn't right. And I wouldn't have noticed this without kind of this examination process of the little things, the tiny little habits that I developed in my life. Now, this one happened to be pretty easy to fix once I identified it. We simply got out our old school digital alarm clock. I unplugged my phone charger, brought it upstairs. So now every night, I plug my phone in upstairs. So even when I get down in the bed and I want to check the weather, it's not there. So I have to get my lazy butt out of bed, go upstairs and check the phone, which I'm not going to do. So I go to bed, right? And then we get to have this adult conversation. And I think it's the little things like that, right? It's not the big, well, you know, I might be cheating on my wife, or I might have stolen money from this person or that, right? Those are the kinds of things we think about, but it's really those little habits that I think really inhibit our growth or can really support our growth. Now, through the process of the examination, you can identify them and you can tweak them. And, you know, the really interesting thing about this is there's a lot of solid backing for this examination process. Not just in the Christian world, right? But a few years ago, I was reading this in-depth scholarly study of the people, the real-life people of Confucius, Jesus, Buddha, and Muhammad. And contrary to what I like to believe, that they all basically were talking about the same thing, well, they weren't all necessarily talking about the same thing. There were significant differences in what they thought and what they taught. However, the one thing that they pointed out, that these scholars pointed out, the one thing that they all had in common that was very consistent across all of them, that was different than the other philosophers and thinkers of their era, is that on a regular basis, usually daily, each one of them engaged in not just spiritual thought, but spiritual practice, right? So Jesus took walks by lakes and on the mountainsides. Muhammad went out into the desert, went into the caves, right? Buddha sat under trees or sat by a river, and all of them did some variation of this kind of examination process. And that's quite honestly what most of the scholars would say, why they had such a big influence on the world, because they were acting as well as thinking, and they were really taking these notions of spiritual growth seriously in their own lives so that they could then share that with other people. So, you know, it's like they were training themselves. Right? We think about training in terms of working out and running and doing stuff, but they were training themselves spiritually, right? To be more loving, to be more patient, more generous, more wise, and to overall just be more effective human beings. Now, I think kind of the cool thing about Jesus' message, and to a certain extent, all the rest of their message too, but regardless of how you feel about Jesus, regardless of whether you think he was literally the Son of God, figuratively the Son of God, the basic message of Jesus is that this kind of spiritual growth is not reserved exclusively for the spiritual elites, right? For the priests that study the scholarly text and that get to go around and judge everybody else. But that it's right there and it's available. This growth is available. And in fact, it's not just available, it's intended for each and every one of us, regardless of how smart or strong we think we are. I think that's a pretty cool and a pretty liberating message. So, if you don't mind, I'm just going to say a quick prayer here, and then we'll be on our way. God, whatever you are, wherever you are, just I'd ask that you'd be with each one of us this week, tonight, tomorrow night, the next night, when we're trying out this kind of weird process of examination, and help us to lovingly and forgivingly examine our habits so that we can become closer to the people that you want us to be and closer to the people that we want to be and to create that life that truly does matter in the way that all of us care about. Amen.